Well, good morning. Welcome to the first week of spring in Ohio. Am I right? Hey, I don't know if all of y'all knew this or not, but we had something pretty big going on around here yesterday. Do I have any ladies in the house who are at IF? Woo! I got an opportunity to be here for just a few hours, and what I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt wasn't yesterday absolutely incredible? And I know for me, you know, looking at yesterday and having 102 women in this room from our city investing in themselves and their lives and their relationship with Jesus is no small feat. And I know oftentimes I was thinking about this, we look at a number like 100 or 102, and in the grand scheme of things, it's really easy for us to think like, well, that's not that big of a number, that's not that many people. But as I put that in perspective, I wanted to put it in perspective for you as well. Do you realize that 102 women is over 1% of our city? You can't tell me that 1% of our city making a commitment to change their lives, to change their stories, to change their hearts, to change their relationship with Jesus Christ can't be a catalyst for something incredible in our city, in our world, in our households, in our families from this day forward. You see, yesterday was no small feat, and I know every single week when I walk up here on stage and I'm in the middle of all the details that happen and speaking, it's so easy for me oftentimes to leave this place feeling disappointed and wondering, like, are people getting anything from what I'm saying? Am I connecting? I did this wrong and this didn't go as well as it should have. But just to be able to sit in the back yesterday, in so many moments for me, and I'm not a woman, for me to, through the speakers and through the things that were happening, for me to just be overcome with emotion on this premise, that in this room you could just experience and feel like God doing something in the hearts and in the lives of so many people. That there was change that's on the precipice. In this church, in so many families, and in this city because of yesterday. And I thought this morning it was only fitting on the back end of that for me to issue a challenge to two different groups of y'all. And if you're a man in this room and you had your wife here yesterday, most likely if you've got kids, yesterday was a difficult day, right? And it's easy for you to get stuck in this thought process of yesterday didn't go as I could have. It was kind of an inconvenience for you to be gone all day and for me to have to take care of the inmates here around the house and everything that was going on. And man, I just want to challenge you to this. Would you be willing to drop that narrative? I thought about bringing my two boys up on stage, but I knew what a disaster that would be this morning. But here's what I know beyond a shadow of a doubt. I needed my wife to be here yesterday. My boys needed my wife to be here yesterday. And while, men, it might have been a difficult day for you or felt like an inconvenient day, your marriages, your households, your life will reap the benefit of what happened yesterday. And so what would it look like for us to just be supportive of, I know that's what you needed, I know that's what we needed, and we wanted to do everything we could so that you could be a part of that. To the women who are here, I want to challenge you to this. Don't let yesterday end. Our city needs you to not let yesterday end. Your workplaces need you to not let yesterday end. For it to be a catalyst, not just for our city, for your own life, for your own situations, for your own circumstances, to push that forward and to bring about change that this world so desperately needs. And now you look around and what you see is this. You have at least 101 other women to lean on, 101 other women who should be committed to the same, who you can all charge forward together, and men will do our best to fall in line. If nothing else that I learned yesterday, men, we can at least learn this. Ladies, you rock it when you worship, all right? We need to learn from that a little bit, men. Like, you ladies were absolutely incredible. But what I want you to do is just to continue to push forward, to continue to lean into each other and to not let yesterday end. And that brings us to today. Today, we continue with part three of this five-part series we've been in called Stay Positive. And if you haven't caught any of this series up until this point, the premise of this entire series is ridiculously simple. You see, this entire series is built on the concept of reframing our mind, reframing our thoughts, and beginning to think about things that are different than the rest of the world around us is thinking. Because if you're anything like me, it's not too difficult for us to look out into the negative events of this world and even the negative circumstances of our own seasons of our lives and to begin to dwell solely on the negative, for us to zero in on all the negative things that are happening around us. And yet what we've learned throughout this series and the point that we've come back to every single week, and we will as long as this series goes, is this. Is that in the moments of our lives where it becomes so easy for us to solely focus on the negative and to look around and to see that everybody else is talking about it or on our social media feeds, everybody else is seeing it and posting about it. Is that when we engage in the negative and we become zeroed in on the negative, what we miss is that a negative outlook never leads to a positive life. You see, when we carry with us a negative outlook through the days of our lives, we begin to live a life that can best be defined as less than. Less than what you want, less than what God intended for you. But that isn't the only issue with a negative outlook. You see, here is what I've learned about myself in the moments I purely focus on the negative circumstances of my life and even the negative events of the world around me. And I'm willing to bet that many of you can relate to this as well. Is that when my mind becomes consumed with purely the negative things that are happening around me, it begins to impact what I see looking back at me every single morning when I look in the mirror. Is that my negative outlook slowly turns into a negative inlook. Anybody else been there? Is that oftentimes it begins to affect the way that we look at ourselves, the confidence we have in ourselves, and we begin to adjust accordingly, that we'll never be good enough, that we'll never measure up, that our lives will always be filled with these insecurities and inadequacies that just keep rising to the surfaces. And that can be a real issue for many of us, because if you're anything like me, I am my own worst critic. Anybody else there with me? That we have a tendency as humanity to be our own worst critic. And in those moments where we are our own worst critic, it becomes ridiculously easy to see the flaws that we possess and the inadequacies that we exhibit to the world around us every single day. And in those moments where my confidence begins to erode from beneath me, here's what typically happens. I have a tendency to respond in one of a few ways. That in order for me to rebuild my confidence, that there are three things that I typically keep going back to this bucket again and again and again, propping my confidence to these things, thinking that these things will bring sustainability to the confidence that I want and that I need in my life to be able to live a bolder life, a more confident life with less worry. Number one, typically for me, I find myself oftentimes in these moments fishing for compliments. And in the moments of my life where I'm experiencing less than when I look at myself in the mirror and it begins to erode at my confidence as a pastor, and I leave this place disappointed, and I leave this place discouraged, and I'm wondering if I'm making a difference, and I'm wondering if what I say ever connects with people, ever has the ability to change hearts, to change lives, if I'm actually a great servant and a great vessel for the kingdom of the world, or if this should all just be thrown away. In the moments where I feel like less than as a father, in the moments where I feel pulled away by my work, by email, by the phone, and constantly attached to it, and I recognize that my kids aren't getting the best version of me, and I'm not being the father that my kids desperately need, or I'm less than as a leader, less than as a husband. In those moments, I find myself fishing for compliments, laying something out there for my wife solely on the premise that I need you to just say something good about me, whether it's true or not, to rebuild the self-confidence that I have of myself. Or number two, I find myself in those moments of my life, and some of y'all know people like this, right? Some of us find ourselves becoming the one-upper. You know what I'm talking about? Every time there's a story told, they always have a one-up to every story that's told. It's like somebody around the water cooler in the break room at your workplace starts to tell a story about the fish they caught, and this person somehow always catches a fish that's 1 inch bigger than the story that's being told, right? but they always went on a little bit better vacation, a little bit better weekend, a little bit bigger boat, a little bit more famous celebrity that they shook hands with after you tell the story of the celebrity that you shook hands with. And we become the one-upper, thinking that if everybody else can look at me as if my story is better, then the confidence within me will begin to rise. Or three, and maybe the most detrimental of all, we become people who believe that our confidence can be boosted by pushing others down. Is that maybe I'll feel better about myself if I make you feel less about yourself. And time again, we keep coming back to this well, propping our confidence to things that are unsustainable. Things that never produce the confidence we want, that we need in order for us to live bolder, less fearful, more confident lives from this day forward within the context of our marriages, within the context of our parenting, within the context of our finances, and within the context of a negative, hurting, broken world that needs us to act and respond and think and do things differently than everybody else. And you see, the reason that we keep going back to this well of unsustainable things is because for many of us, if not all of us, for far too long in our adult lives, we have believed that the key to a bolder, more confident, less worrisome life lies in me having the most self-confidence in myself that I can possibly have. But what if I told you that the key to a better life, a key to a bolder, more confident, less worrisome life, wasn't actually about self-confidence at all? What if I told you that the kickoff this morning, none of us actually need more self-confidence? That we don't need more self-confidence to begin to live the life we want to live and change this world in the way in which we've been created to change this world. To see change come to our families, our marriages, our finances, our workplaces, whatever it may be, in the way we want it to see, the way we want it to come about. That we don't actually need more self-confidence to make that happen. Take a realistic look with me. You ever seen those people in your life who seem so ridiculously self-confident? Most likely, in many of those people, one of two things is happening. Number one, they're either really good at disguising the lack of confidence that they feel inside of themselves. And what they see, similar to what you see every single morning when they look in the mirror, they're filled with worry and doubt and fear, just like you are, but they're incredibly good at putting on a mask and putting on a disguise and looking into the world around them as if they are ridiculously confident. Or number two, they are so out of touch with themselves and their own flaws that they don't even see what the rest of the world sees. That their ego is so bloated and they're so full of pride that they don't even recognize the flaws that they have, or they think that the fault is on everybody else. And the reality is that in our lives, the key to boldness, the key to a less worrisome life, the key to more confidence doesn't actually lie in me putting more confidence in myself. Why? Because it actually lies in us growing our God confidence. See, notice earlier I said most likely one of those two things was happening. Why? Because there are a select few in this world who have learned the technique of placing their confidence outside of themselves. A select few who have realized that lasting confidence isn't propped up on themselves, but rather on something that is far more constant and unchanging. You see, Paul realized this when he wrote this in his first letter to the church in Corinth. Check this out. In chapter 10, verse 12, Paul writes this: forget about self-confidence. It's useless. Cultivate God confidence. You see, there are a select few who are living a better, more positive life because they've found this incredible ability to embrace this dynamic that many of us didn't know existed or have done a ridiculously good job at ignoring in all lives up until this point. And this dynamic starts in the unlikeliest of places, by first acknowledging our own brokenness and our weaknesses, and that the problem actually lies in me putting my confidence, my hope, my trust in myself and in myself alone. You see, the reason that this is a problem for all lives and the confidence we will experience from this day forward in order to live a bolder, more fearless, less worrisome life is actually threefold. Because of what we know when we look close enough at ourselves and our own human nature. You see, the problem with self-confidence starts here, that my heart is deceitful. Jeremiah writes this, "The human heart is the most deceitful of all things and desperately wicked. Who really knows how bad it is?" At its core, my heart is deceitful. It's broken. It is a mess. When I look close enough at myself and get honest enough, I can see that to be true in my reactions, in my relationships, that my heart is deceitful. And secondly, that my flesh is weak. Jesus made this clear when he was here on earth. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak. You see, I'm not sure if you've noticed this or acknowledged this truth or not, but our bodies are constantly fading away. That is the sentence we have been dealt on this earth. It is constantly fading away to nothing. Our bodies are weak. They are not sustainable. They cannot be trusted for forever. There will be a day where they no longer hold up. And then third, my behavior is inconsistent. Paul writes this in Romans chapter 7. "I don't really understand myself, for I want to do what is right, but I don't do it. Instead, I do what I hate. I know all the right things to do when it comes to my marriage. I know the right things to do when it comes to how I treat my kids. I know the right things to do when it comes to whether or not I should continue to swipe this plastic that's in my back pocket and go further and further into credit card debt. I know what to do in the friends that I pick or the people I hang out with or how I convene with the people at my work or how I invite people or how I serve or how I give. I know the right things, and yet what I also know is that my behavior is inconsistent. What I want to do, so often, I just don't do it. What I know is right, I don't do, and yet the times that I know it's wrong, I just keep going back to that website. I just keep having that fight with my wife. I just keep going here and doing things that I know I really shouldn't do." You see, the reality is why many people fail to live according to this dynamic is because taking this first step of acknowledging our weakness is something that for many of us would absolutely crush us. And so we just avoid it at all costs. We try to do what we talked about earlier and put on a good mask, a good disguise, continue to build into our own self-confidence by pushing others down. Whatever it takes for me to feel better about myself and the confidence I have in myself when I look back in the mirror. But this powerful dynamic in a relationship with Jesus allows us to actually say this: "This is who I am. I am broken, but that does not define me." Hello. Y'all okay? That I can acknowledge that this is who I am, but I can also acknowledge that in a relationship with Jesus, this brokenness no longer defines me. That my confidence is not found in me being perfect. My confidence is found in allowing a perfect God to cover my imperfections. And there is a select few that are capable of building confidence off of the fact that the story of my weakness doesn't have to be about how weak I am in the moment. That actually the best story of my weakness comes in how strong God was in the moments of my weakness. Did you catch that? The best story of my weakness isn't how weak I was in the moment. It was how strong God was in my weakest moments. It's why a king brought himself back to this time and time again. In Psalm 57, King David, the most powerful man in all the world at this time, wrote this: "For my heart is confident in you, O God. My heart is confident. No wonder I can sing your praises." The most powerful man in the world knew the importance of seeing his flaws through the lens of his Father's perfection. That I need confidence to move forward in this world. I'm the most powerful man in the world. What other position could you get that should provide the most self-confidence possible? And yet what David realized in that position, even this position is not enough to prop up confidence in myself. That I need something that's more constant, that lasts longer, that's more sustainable, that can be trusted. And that confidence should be placed in one man and in one man only. See, deep down, don't we all want to live more courageous lives? We want to be bold and courageous in a negative world that makes it feel like the safe play, the only logical solution is for you to continue to play it safe. It's for you to continue to do what everybody else is doing. It's for you to continue to live with the fear and the worry that's gripping everybody else as they look at all the negative events of the world and all the negative circumstances of their life. But don't deep down we want something different? Don't deep down we want something better from this day forward? And the reality is that the problem is oftentimes we have no idea how to in a world where all I see is my flaws. And this morning, I want to uncover the how-to. That if you want to build your confidence, a confidence that lasts, every single day, our confidence must be placed in these three truths. In these three truths that allow us to live the lives we were created to live, full of boldness and courage and confidence and less worry. You see, it begins here. That if we want to build our confidence, the first truth we must cling to and remind ourselves of and live in every single day is that my God is always for me. That we have a God who is always for us. And let's set the record straight, because for many of us in this room, we've spent a majority of our adult lives believing that the opposite was actually true. And let me just speak this into your life, your circumstances, and into your future. God is not out to get you. We have a God who loves you more than that. We don't have a heavenly Father who's sitting on his throne in heaven just waiting to spite me with his judgment. And you're saying, but Ben, how do you know that? This is how I know that. You see, I'm fairly new to this whole parenting thing. But in being fairly new to this whole parenting thing, what I can admit to is this, that when it comes to my parenting, there are plenty of flaws. That I make mistakes on almost a daily basis when it comes to my parenting. But in spite of that, what I also recognize about my parenting is this, is that when it comes to my relationship with my kids and the choices they make every single day, never once have I parented from a perspective of I am just waiting for them to make a mistake. Like, I can't wait from my throne of the household for them to make a mistake so I can spite them with the judgment of the Father. You see, I don't want to catch my kids. I want to compel my kids to do the right thing, to live the best life possible. And what I recognize is that if me, as an imperfect father, parents in that way, how much more does a perfect heavenly Father desire to parent in that way as well? We have a God who never once has loved you from a perspective of just waiting to catch you. But every single day loves you from a place of wanting to compel you. To live life and to live it to the full, to have a rich and satisfying life, to experience what very few are experiencing by doing what very few are doing, by following him. You see, this is what Paul writes in Romans chapter 8. If God is for us, who can ever be against us? If God is for us, who can ever be against us? If the God of the universe is in my corner, you know what Paul is saying? It really shouldn't matter to me whether you're in my corner or not. I don't need your approval when I've got God's. And I already know that I have a God that's always for me, and that allows me to live differently. Growing up, my father, maybe the best way to term this, was passionate about our sports. And in being passionate about our sports growing up, every single game that we had, my dad was always that parent in the stands who was yelling from the stands instructions at me. He might have defined it as to me, you know? Every time I didn't do something that I was supposed to do or see something that I was supposed to see, every time that I didn't see the potential in myself to do something that needed to be done, my father was calling that out, seeing something in me that I didn't first see. And growing up and walking through those moments oftentimes were difficult. And every once in a while, just a little bit embarrassing. And my mother, oh, saint. I have no idea how through the years she stayed in the seat next to my father. How she didn't get up and like move sections and like, I don't even know who that dude is. But what I do recognize is that I look back on those moments of my life when my father was constantly walking through this process with me, what I realized is that every time I walked out on that court, my play changed. What I did changed. Why? Because I knew I had somebody in my corner. I knew every single time I walked out on that court, I had somebody cheering for me. I had somebody pushing on me. I had somebody who saw something in me that oftentimes I didn't see in myself. And you see, the correlation to our lives is this, is that every single day of your life, you have a Heavenly Father who's doing the exact same thing for you. A God who's attempting to cheer you on. A God who's attempting to push you. A God who's attempting to see something in you that you oftentimes don't see in yourself. And when we acknowledge that and accept that, our play in this game called life changes. The way in which we do things, the way in which we live boldly, changes on the back of that. He's doing that right now in your story. And in acknowledging that, how we get to live is this. We don't have to live lives in which we are constantly seeking the approval of others or even seeking the approval of God. For those of us who have a relationship with Jesus, we get to live our lives out of the overflow of the approval we already have. Hello? Y'all okay? Anybody else want to live like that for a day? I get to live my life not constantly seeking the approval of you or believing that I have to live my life chasing the approval of my God. I get to live out of the overflow of the approval that I already have from my Heavenly Father. You see, the writer of Hebrews terms it this way. He says, so don't throw away that confident trust in the Lord. Remember the great reward that it brings you. Hang on to the fact that you have a God who is always for you, a God who is always in your corner and wants the best for you, a God who never tries to catch you, but daily wants to compel you to live differently, to live better, so that you and your marriage and your parenting and your finances and your workplace and your world can experience something better from this day forward. He is always for you. And secondly, my God is always helping me. My God always helps me. The writer of Hebrews continues in this way in chapter 13. And if you've never heard this, this is so good. For God has said, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. And for many of us, we've lived our adult lives in this way. Am I right? Yeah, God, but remember back to that one thing that I did. Remember back to that one moment. Like, there's no way you could want anything to do with me after that. After that mistake, after that flaw. Everybody else has told me, I've believed, I've been in churches that have told me, there's no way that I'll ever be good enough for you, God. And God's like, whoa, what don't you understand about the word never? I tried to make it clear. I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. So we can say with confidence, not confidence in myself, not confidence in my capabilities, confidence in this fact, the Lord is my helper, so I will have no fear. What can mere people do to me? See, this morning, can I ask you this question? Where in your life right now do you feel unsure? Where in your life do you feel like you just don't measure up? That you'll never be good enough. That you'll never be able to fix that flaw. That you'll never be able to bounce back from that mistake. That you'll never be able to turn things around in that area because you are just too far gone. Now let me ask you this question. For how long have you been putting your confidence in and solely relying on yourself to make that right? How long have you believed that this is all on me? And I don't know how to do it. I don't know where to start. I don't know if it's even possible on my own to fix it. And so I'm just deemed to believe that there's no fixing this, that there's no getting out of this, that there's no being good enough. And you see, what we miss in that equation is this, is that the perfect God of the universe, the God who holds the world in his hands, desires to be your helper, to help you fix it, to never leave you on your own. You see, he is our firm foundation. He hasn't failed us yet. That's what this passage says. He hasn't failed us yet. So why would he start now? I'm not going to sing it. He won't. He won't. That's the confidence that we get to have. That's the confidence that never falls, that never fails, that we can prop our lives up on and rest assured that it will always remain standing. About 14 years ago, my father passed away from early onset Alzheimer's. And in the process of planning his funeral, somebody got the bright idea that it would be a great idea for me and my two brothers to be a part of giving the message for my father's funeral. And in doing so and agreeing to this great idea, we sat down and we began to prepare. Three individual parts, three different things about Dad that stood out to us, that impacted our lives, that influenced who we were as young men moving forward in this world. And y'all, this was 14 years ago. If you think I'm a poor communicator from stage now, just think back 14 years ago. And because of that, in preparing for this moment at 21, 22 years old, there was a severe lack of confidence. And I had just gotten into ministry at that point, but what I knew was this. In ministry, there was no way that I was ever going into a facet of ministry in which I would be called into public communication on a consistent basis. We make plans, God laughs, you know how that goes, right? And so in the preparation, the hours and minutes leading up to that moment where we had to walk up on that stage and deliver a message of who my dad was and what he meant to me and what he had passed on to me, and then ultimately what he had passed on to me that had that opportunity and the ability to impact other people's hearts and other people's eternities. There were all of these nerves and a lack of confidence, a lack of boldness, and a lack of courage, and a whole lot of worry that was rising up in me. And I'll never forget, in the minutes leading up to that moment, I had just gotten my first big boy job. I had just graduated college and just started at a very large church. They hired me for a position I was not qualified for, and I did not deserve to be hired for. And they took a chance on a young man. And I was literally 3 weeks into my first job. Here I was at a church, over 3,000 people with about 50 staff members. And in the moments leading up to me walking on stage and delivering this message, I'll never forget. I'm trying not to get emotional. My pastor walking in. And home was about an hour and a half away from where my job was. And I thought at that point, like, he has no idea who I even am. And yet here he was. Walking into this incredibly important, incredibly devastating moment of my life. And I'll never forget, he put his arm around me in that moment and he said, Ben, I know you're battling a whole lot of confidence issues right now and you don't think you can do this, but you can. I believe in you. And in that moment, walking into that auditorium and him walking in and sitting down, just his presence, just his confidence, just his belief changed everything. And I know y'all have experienced moments in your life where just the presence of someone changes everything. And I'll never forget, a few weeks after that happened, he called me into his office. And he said, Ben, I know you're battling all these things. You're uncertain about what your future holds, but I just want you to know this, and I just want to speak this into your life, into your future. The moment I heard you give that message at your dad's funeral, I knew that there was something more in you than what you saw in yourself. That God had something planned for your future. That maybe even before that moment, yeah, we took a chance on you, but I didn't even see and I didn't even know was there. You see, the crazy part is that we have a God whose presence in our lives and in our most difficult circumstances changes everything as well. A God who is there trying to speak something into you that you don't see in yourself, that you don't know how to get out, that you don't know how to fix it. And we have a God who says, no, I want to walk in this with you. I want to be in the mess with you. This doesn't scare me away. The lack of potential that you see, what you see looking back at you in the mirror, that doesn't scare me. I'm in this to help you. I'm in this to call something out of you, and I'm never going anywhere. The same dude we talked about earlier, David, he wrote this. God is our refuge and strength. And I love the term he uses here. An ever-present help in trouble. Ever-present. I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. I will never go anywhere. My God always helps me. And then lastly, you see, oftentimes if we want to live a life defined by boldness and confidence and less worry, the step that we must take is that oftentimes we must also be committed to letting ourselves off the hook. That we have to recognize that in our lives, in our imperfections, in our flaws, in our human nature, grace is being extended, has been extended to us. And we have to recognize and bask in this truth that my God is still working on me. My God is still working on me. My God is still working in me. For many of you, you know our story that Krista and I have a 4- and 5-year-old boy. And our oldest, we're in the kindergarten preparation stages. This is his last year of preschool. And we're going through all of these things in these final months of preschool in which we're like, okay, this is what you're gonna have to know when you go off to kindergarten. Like, you need to know these things. You need to get these things right. And bless his heart, my oldest, what we know beyond a shadow of a doubt at 5 years old is my oldest is never gonna be a test taker. Like ACT, nah, let's not waste our money on that. Because my oldest, like, you'll send him off and like, go play hide and seek with your brother. And we're working on counting. Like, you got to know how to count up to this number. And it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Then at night, we'll sit down for story time. And I'm like, buddy, all right, we're reading through this book. Count the number of muffins on this page. And it's like 1, 2, 5. It's like, buddy, no. Start over. You got this. I just heard you count with your brother. Start over. You can do this. And he does it again. 1, 2, 5. And come on, parents, humor me, right? You've been in this position where it's like night after night. It's like, we've been over 3. It's not that difficult. And in those moments, as a father, I like absolutely lose my religion, right? Like, how can we not get this? And then I get up from story time and I walk out of the room, and you know what immediately smacks me in my face? How am I back here again? Why do I keep making such a big deal out of something that isn't that big of a deal? Why do I keep making this mistake? Why does this flaw keep surfacing inside of me and outside of me as a father? How do I change this? How do I get better at this? And too often these moments deflate my confidence as a man, as a father, as a husband, whatever it is for you, fill in the blank for your own situation. Why? Because too often I forget it's okay for God still to be working on me. For God still to be working in me. You see, Paul had to come to this realization. The same guy who said, I keep doing what I don't want to do, and what I do want to do, I can never seem to do it. The truth that Paul had to come back to was this, and I am certain that God, who began the good work within you, will continue his work until it is finally finished on the day when Christ Jesus returns. You know what Paul was saying? God's not done with you yet. God's not done with you yet. And maybe this morning you need to turn to the person next to you and you need to tell them, God's not done with you yet. And you need to exclude the second part that's like, and it's a good thing because you got a lot to work on. But God is still working in us. He is offering grace to us, and it's about time, in the midst of our flaws, in the midst of trying to build our own self-confidence, that we let go of what we continue to hold against ourselves and accept the grace that has been freely offered and begin to recognize, my God's still working on me. He's still working in me. I'm on this journey. I'm on this path towards something better, and I'm not there yet, but I'm taking steps daily. I'm getting better daily, and that allows me to know that my hope and my confidence doesn't have to be placed on me and my flaws, but in a God who's bigger, a God who's greater, a God who sees more, a God who is perfect. And yet also doesn't hold it against me. It's okay with continuing to work on me and chisel away. See, with the negative of this world and the negative circumstances of your life, you ever feel like you're not good enough? Constantly feeling void of confidence because of all your flaws? See, can I just speak this into your life? Your confidence begins to change from this day forward when you're able to look at the world and say, I don't need confidence that stems from your approval. I don't need your approval. You know why? Because I already have a God who's crazy about me. I'm going to choose to stop living in your approval, and I'm going to start living from the overflow of his. Now, I am who he says I am. Now, I am chosen. I am forgiven. I'm not forsaken. God is for me, not against me. There's a place for me, a purpose for me. And when I have confidence that lies in that, I don't need anything else. I choose to see that my God is always for me. My God always helps me. And that my God is still working on me. And when I look at that, and remind myself of that and hold to that every single day, my confidence changes. Not because I become less flawed, not because I have more self-confidence, but because what I'm looking at, who I'm looking to, changes. And when what I'm looking at changes, everything changes. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who looks at us in the midst of our flaws, in the moments where we lack boldness, in the moments where our confidence has evaporated beneath us, in the moments where we made mistakes as a parent, as a spouse, as a leader, as a friend. And yet you're a God who consistently speaks the same thing over me. You don't need the approval of this world. You've already got mine. I am who you say I am. I'm there. I'm for you. You are not forsaken. You are not too far gone. You are still mine. I claim you. The God of the universe claims me. This morning, what else can we say but thank you? And pray that we have the courage to not look at all the negative events and negative circumstances of this world or our lives, but we focus on something different. Not on the things that try to prop up our own self-confidence, but we grow our God confidence. We look to you, who never wavers, who never changes. We place our hope and our trust in you and in you alone. It's in your name that we pray.